It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running for this, the 13th day of September, 2018. It is, in fact, Thorn in the Side, Thursday, the 13th of September, 2018. This is, in fact, The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go if you'd like to be part of the Madcap Merry Multimedia Wacky Zany Real-Time Extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting to see if I can, like, you know, dude, get in there. So let's see. Apparently I'm in there now. Who knows? But if you pick out a screen name and a password and jump in, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Little Thunder and Otto to Chat and Terry and VT Blom and Butch, and all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master on a lovely Northern California day, has chosen to fold space and become man cave. Yes. And let's see. It's been absolutely captivating to me today. Let's go live now to 34 miles right there at the juncture of South Carolina and North Carolina. Let's go 34 miles offshore for a little gnat sound. Yeah, that's not even the hurricane force winds yet. Those are some of the outer bands of Florence as they turn down there to what are called frying pan shoals. There's an old lighthouse platform out there. It was built to be able to hold a few members of the Coast Guard, and built sort of like an oil platform meant to withstand this kind of stuff. It got abandoned, and later on it was bought by some wealthy guy who has turned it into a sort of an eco-adventure bed and breakfast. There's nobody on it right now, but there's a webcam out there pointed out to sea, and it's absolutely captivating. Don't go look or you'll turn away from the program. Please don't do that. But I confess that about the last 2 hours, okay, it's sort of a two... Did I do the Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part? Because I am. For about the last 2 hours, the combination of this video and audio, and there's an American flag in the shot. It started out as just another American flag. It is in the process of being ripped to tatters. I couldn't miss the irony of it a little bit ago. If you the red and white stripes, 13 of them, represent the 13 original states. So if you think about the stripes going from bottom to top, you know, south to north, the bottom three would be Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. And the first thing those winds did was rip those three stripes away from the main body of the main body of the flag. And it has gone downhill from there. So like I said, it was a multifaceted fascination that I've had for the last couple of hours, because I found the feed of this over on the CNN's Facebook page, and they've got their own chat up for it. And oh my God, the maggots are losing their teensy, tiny, sloppy, sloshy little remnants of their minds. Why ain't somebody gone out there and took an in the flag? You don't leave our flag out in them kinds of inclementine weathers. You don't do that. That's a disrespect in the flag. Fucking idiots. Sorry, we're getting into the vulgarity early this evening, I guess. But it really, no, not kidding. That's it. And pray for Flaggy. Flaggy's out there, and won't nobody come in and save it. Oh, my God, this is just like what's happening to our country. Our great, how's America ever going to be great again if we can't even take care of a flag? And then occasionally people will go, hey, dumbass, it's 34 miles out to sea. Get rowing. Breaking news courtesy of Tracy in L.A. Paul Manafort's taking a plea deal. We'll have to see if we can scrounge up some more details on that. But, yeah, they really are as stupid as we think they are. Because it said right there, you know, on a platform 34 miles out to sea. But the maggots can't be bothered to, you know, read things. Meanwhile, somebody posts and says, may Allah protect all those in harm's way. And immediately there's a maggot right on top of him. Why are you telling people to pray to Allah? Allah ain't no real God. Only God is real God. You idiot. He's probably been known as Allah or Allah longer than he's been known as God, you know, just because English, ancient Semitic languages, ancient Semitic deity. Try to explain that to a maggot. No, don't. No, life is short. No. And even what you get with the microphone on the webcam doesn't do what's going on out there justice. My mind goes, like I said, you don't want to live in my mind, but it goes all kinds of different places. And I was reminded, I got kind of the surprise of my life. Last February, when I got to go, perhaps for the first and perhaps the last time, to a concert in Carnegie Hall. Nothing, you know, no microphones, no amplification, just an acoustically magnificent space, and a whole bunch of naturally, you know, instruments making their own sounds. And it was like I'd never heard a violin or a bass fiddle or a piano before. No matter how good the reproducing device, the microphone, is, it can never do justice to exactly what the sound being made is. There's going to be something lost in the translation. And it's kind of that way with this webcam 34 miles out to sea. It can't, just as the human eye can never be replaced by a camera, no matter what, you know, you look and you see something beautiful, it's not going to be the same thing when you take a picture of it. And the picture will not do justice to the magnificence that your eye beheld. Well, it's the same thing with the human ear. And there is a shrieking, I've been told, but, you know, I've heard tornadoes, but they're 5 minutes and done. This is breathtaking noise for hours on end. And, of course, the fact that Hurricane Florence is going to probably dumping a shit ton of rain on Florence, South Carolina, well, that's not lost on me either. There is no magical deistic power in the universe save for the power of irony, and then thus we reserve our reverence here for the goddess of irony, and she seems to be hard at work. Oh, we have thanks to send out, of course, at the beginning of the program every evening, and the 13th of the month is the lonely 13th of the month for Gary and Gaia. So thanks to our subscribers, Gary and Gaia, on the 13th of the month for chipping in and helping keep the horn on the air. Thanks also go out right at the end of the program or a little bit thereafter to our pal Catherine, who has formerly been Catherine in Arizona. But now, I'm informed, she's Catherine in California. So we managed to reduce the fundraising goal yesterday evening down to... what was it? I get lost. I didn't jot it down, but it's something like 335. So let's say that this evening's fundraising goal is 485. That's actually less than what it would be, but it's my bad for forgetting. So the fundraising goal is 485. That's 48 and a half people at $10 a piece, or 10 people at $48.50, and all the other ciphering that goes with it. For some reason or another, Skype does not want to load on the machine that usually brings in Skype, which is weird and distressing, especially with Friday on the front porch on the way tomorrow. Don't know quite what to make of that. While I'm doing this, I'll be doing that. But again, thanks to Kath and Catherine and thanks to Gary and Gaia. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully, we'll get some bills paid, because we're getting to that part of the month where if you tune in and I'm not here, you'll know that, you know, didn't get the bills paid because we didn't do the fundraising. It's not the same as Oral Roberts saying he's going to be called home. No, just it's the reality of trying to run independent. Progressive radio. Let's check in on the email real quick before we jump into the heart of the matter. Lee in New York. Subject line, flag. I recall being told that the Soviet Union objected to the American flag being on the Viking lander on Mars. The response was essentially, go and remove it. If you care about the flag in the ocean, take it down. Too bad these people do not care what the flag is supposed to stand for. And that is ultimately the issue, isn't it, Lee? I wonder how all the maggots feel about those flags we left on the moon. Flags on the moon. Yeah, right. No, we did. We put and yeah, they didn't care for it. Yeah, too bad. I claim this planet in the name of Mars. Oh, there's, what is that? Is that two Marvin Martian references in 3 days? I think it is. I don't know if that's ever happened before here on the horn. Am I going to just have to go and get an all-fresh, download an all-fresh copy of Skype? I mean, it's like it's freaking disappeared. Sorry, this is just really goddamn weird. Let me try it this way. Well, at any rate, we still have the stress line, so if you want to reach the program later, you can always use that. And you can use the toll-free line. The toll-free line, of course, to reach the program is 844-843-4676. It is now set up to ring in to the stress line, and the stress line itself is area code 304-640-2829, 304-640-2829. And I'll try to get Skype up and running, but damn, that's just bizarre. Damn it. Okay, well, maybe you'll take a break or something. And VT Blom tells me in the chat room that Skype updated yesterday. So maybe that explains something. What's this? Just had an email from our buddy Rhonda. Thorns everywhere this thorn in the side Thursday. Well, Rhonda, I wish that was real. I have a sneaking suspicion that it's not. You know, we've been so obsessed with the hurricane coming, and we have a for-profit media that has a sort of obsessive-compulsive disorder and has a hard time covering other stories that I feel like. And, you know, from time to time, I've mentioned that line that comes at the end of Death of a Salesman, where Willie Loman's wife says, attention must be paid. We had another mass shooting last night in Bakersfield, California. Details are sketchy because details are sketchy on all mass shootings by design. But five people are dead. And then the gunman shot himself. We don't know what kind of weapon he used. But we do know he killed five people. And here's one of these interesting little tidbits as we consider. I said it, that's by design that we don't really know what the details are. The FBI maintains all kinds of statistics on all kinds of crimes. But you're screwed if you want to find out, if you want to get fine-grained detail about our slaughter problem in the United States of America. An article I ran across in Popular Science from a couple of days ago, September 11th, by Sarah Chodosh. Of course semi-automatic guns are deadlier. Here's why scientists took so long to say so. And it starts out with an explanation that scientists have now determined what seems obvious but has not been scientifically proven, that semi-automatic firearms are more deadly than conventional firearms. It's a research letter that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. It begins by noting, currently there are no comprehensive assessments of injuries from different types of firearms. And they go on to say, incidents involving semi-automatic rifles may differ from other incidents in ways that may partially explain the association but cannot be controlled. This lack of data highlights the need for a national centralized database to inform the debate on an assault weapons ban. See where... Right. It's one chart. One little tiny chart in the research letter in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And in order to produce it, the people who were doing the research had to match each incident with media coverage to determine the precise weapon type. Semi-automatic weapons, yada yada, they tell you. The FBI database does not distinguish between semi-automatic nor non-semi-automatic rifles, so at least three articles had to confirm the firearm type for the researchers to be sure they had the right data. Using this method for every incident in the FBI database from 2000 to 2017, the researchers ended up with 248 shootings, a quarter of which involved a semi-automatic weapon. Most of the rest featured handguns, followed by shotguns, and then non-semi-automatic rifles. Now, that makes me a little bit curious because there's such a thing as semi-automatic pistols, semi-automatic handguns. So I wonder if we've already got a nomenclature problem here. You know, some Glock pistols will hold up to 19 rounds of 9mm Parabellum ammunition. And all you got to do is keep squeezing the trigger and the bullets keep coming out. They self-load. Same thing that happens in an AR-15. So, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, the chart that was produced showed that persons per incident, 10 wounded or killed, 6 wounded, about 4 killed with semi-automatics. Without it, the wounded goes down to about 2.5 and the killed goes down to about 2.2. Or 3 to 2.2. They attribute this to the fact that they fire faster. The only thing you get out of the FBI database is the shooter's age. No other demographic data. If people want to learn about it, they have to go and comb through media reports because the government is forbidden from keeping track of how people get murdered. The Federal Bureau of Investigation is not allowed to track how people get murdered, whether it's by an AR-15 or a Tech-9 or a 38 Special Revolver. Mm-mm. Isn't that amazing? The Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health are also banned from using any federal money to research the effectiveness of semi-automatic versus conventional firearms. I mention that, as I said, because in the shooting in Bakersfield, we don't know what the weapon of choice was by the lawful gun owner. The story is still developing, but has barely been covered at all. It started at a trucking company in Bakersfield, and then it went into a home. 5 innocent people killed, and then the gunman, as police approached him, shot himself in the chest. The lawful gun owner entered the company at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time yesterday, and accosted a man nearby. He shot him. Then he shot the guy's wife. Then he shot a third person who was walking up to the scene. Then he went to a home nearby and killed 2 people there. Then he stole a vehicle and kidnapped a woman and child in it. They escaped, and when the police approached, he shot himself. Because freedom. Because Merca. Of course, another shooting has been on people's minds. That being the murder. I know, she's only been charged with manslaughter, but it sure feels like murder. Turns out a lawyer has been releasing some information in the killing of Botham Jean. And apparently the killer lived right below him, and there had apparently been some noise complaints. Right. That was not previously known. Well, a couple of nights ago, we closed the program with some audio from Dana Lush over at the National Ruble, I mean Rifle, no, I definitely mean Ruble Association, in which the fine folks there at the NRA had put Klan hoods on Thomas the Tank Engine and his friends from that children's program because the NRA hates them some diversity. Okay? Because that's just the kind of people the NRA are. That's the kind of person Dana Lush is. Well, Dana Lush apparently is also most concerned about the killing of Botham Jean. Take it away, Dana.
You know, this could have been very different if Botham Jean had been, say, he was a law-abiding gun owner and he saw somebody coming into his apartment. I don't think there's any context in that the action would have been justified. I mean, if I see somebody coming into my house and I'm not expecting them and they're walking in like they own the place, I would act to defend myself. And this could have been very differently had he actually had a firearm on him. Maybe it would be a different individual. She might be the one carried out.
Yeah. She blamed a young black man who was in his own home, who answered the door and was then summarily executed. She blamed him for not shooting the cop who was in uniform. Anybody want to opine as to what would have happened to a young black man in Dallas, Texas, who shot an off-duty cop in uniform? This is the kind of people the National Ruble Association are. And in a way, it dovetails with what Julius Geezer did this morning, claiming that there weren't really 2,975 more deaths in Puerto Rico, and that it was all made up by Democrats to make him look bad. He's getting closer and closer to sitting around, rolling a couple of ball bearings in the palm of his hand and babbling about strawberries. He dehumanized 2,975 people who died of neglect in the horrifying aftermath of Hurricane Maria on the American territory of Puerto Rico. He blamed the victims, just as, well, Dana Lush blamed Botham Jean for not shooting first and asking questions later. Well, Botham Jean would have been dead either way, because the Dallas police would have come up and made sure there was no trial. That seems inescapably true. These are just some of the things that are taking place while the for-profit media are obsessed with an obviously dangerous hurricane bearing down on the Atlantic seaboard of the the southeastern Atlantic seaboard of the United States. Meanwhile, as Darlene in Connecticut pointed out, headline, gas explosions, fires reported in Massachusetts cities. Multiple suspected gas explosions have set structures on fire across dozens of blocks and forced evacuations in Lawrence, Andover, and North Andover, Massachusetts, according to the Massachusetts State Police earlier today. A school in North Andover, residents of a senior center in Andover, have all been evacuated. There have been responses to 17 separate addresses for fire, explosion, or investigations. The thing they have in common is they are all customers of Columbia Gas. Some neighborhoods have been evacuated because of gas odors. The system is being depressurized by Columbia Gas. Law enforcement and civil authorities say that it's far too early to speculate on cause. It's never too early to speculate on cause. That's the nature of speculation. What it's too early to do is to talk about a cause, because anything at this point is speculation. And I have no doubt whatsoever that out there in Merca, the maggots, having seen this story, are shrieking about the ISIS, Al-Qaeda, MS-13 Mexicans who have caused this. Because it can never be the fault of good old, innocent, flag-waving, flag-loving corporate America. Ron and Raleigh, the subject line, okie dokie. A black man shoots a female cop in Dallas. Can you say snowball's chance in hell? Cop killers are not given the benefit of the doubt. By the way, where is your pal Coleon Noir? You know, that translates as black bowel. Ron and Raleigh says, P.S., getting a little damp here. I'm worried about the folks down east. Open ash pits, hog waste lagoons, and floodwaters don't make a good mix. And they got lots of those. And here's the fun part. They aren't ready. Because, you know, why bother? It's not like the state governments of North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia won't find a way to excuse any corporate misfeasance or malfeasance. As touching upon, no, let's don't ever, Dana Lush hung like Jesus says, Dana, bless her heart, she's been living in a cave. God love her, she can't help it. Mm-hmm. So, it was funny, I found all that out because I was wandering around Twitter and I found where she... she landed on some guy who had some random Twitter who had added her in the post in a tweet for being so disgusting as to suggest that Botham Jean was at fault in his own murder. And she said, cite the passage in the transcript where I said that. And then, like, half of the Twitterverse put up that clip that you just heard here. Oddly enough, she then sort of disappeared. And I'm sure she called the whambulance and is busily nailing herself up on the cross even as we speak. There's a lot to worry about in the storm, and I'm not discounting it. It's just that one wonders about the news value. I mean, I confess, I have been transfixed by this the picture of these boiling seas that aren't even up to hurricane strength yet. We probably won't even see that if the camera survives it. But just that American flag being ripped to shreds by Mother Nature and a hurricane that is obviously made worse by climate change. Well, the irony and the symbolism of it will glue you to the screen. I mean, the noise. But no matter the number of warnings that have gone out, there will always be not atne ute ite bre ite p ite way eple pay. I've seen no interviews with black folks saying, "No, I'm sticking around. I'm going to stay here for this." But there's always Jenna there on the Outer Banks. Wait a minute, I thought I had that turned down. I'll stop that. Okay, all better now. There's always Jenna. Jenna's a pretty blonde, white, young lady who, you remember the mother last night who was, and she and her three precious little daughters were going to ride it out because there's strength in numbers against a hurricane? Jenna, interviewed by Mariana Atencio of MSNBC, Jenna has a different reason.
Some people who are staying.
Andrea, and in fact, this is a barrier island. It is the biggest and the longest beach here in North Carolina. You can see those waves have started to pick up behind me. As Al and Gotti were saying,
it is high tide. We can't because it's radio, but we can imagine theater of the mind and all that.
The water has already started to creep up near these homes in front of the beach. It hasn't even started raining. So this is just a glimpse of what we're going to see in a couple of hours. And as you were mentioning, there is an urgency for people to get out as quick as they can. I was just talking to the mayor of Oak Island. She says at least 500 people of 8,200 have decided to stay for now. People like Jenna over here. Jenna, you're standing in front of your beachfront property. Can you share with us what your plans are at this point?
At this point, I'm going to stay as long as I can. There's a chance that they will close the bridge if you have sustained gusts of 40 miles per hour. So until they close the bridge, I'm going to be here.
What keeps you here? I mean, these are the...
Wait, they're going to close the bridge if there are sustained gusts of 40 miles an hour. If? But at least she says she's going to try to make a mad dash across the bridge at the last moment. Wonder why Jenna is going to do something like that.
There's a chance that they will close the bridge if you have sustained gusts of 40 miles per hour. So until they close the bridge, I'm going to be here.
What keeps you here? I mean, these are the critical sort of last couple of hours to get out.
It's an adrenaline rush, you know. You can't control Mother Nature. She doesn't make exceptions. And as a surfer, see waves this big, except for during hurricanes. So it's kind of surreal to see them here at our home break.
You have your property right behind you there. When you're talking about sustained winds of 110 miles.
Wait, at our home break? That must be surfer talk, you know, because waves break. It's surreal.
Per hour. I mean, what are you expecting for your home?
This house is set back farther than most, and 110 miles an hour, you just don't know what's going to happen. Someone else's roof could blow off and smash into yours. Yours could blow off. You always have to know where your most sacred belongings are.
Your skinny little white girl body could be picked up by the wind and, you know, thrown a few miles, but no. We got your skinny girls here at the Western World. Sorry, Steely Dan.
are, which living here, you always do that. You're putting them in airtight containers, and you just always know where they're at. You have a big car, so you can haul them away and don't get attached to the actual house.
Thank you so much, Jenna. Take care.
Don't get attached to the actual house, you know. Make sure you can get out with your surfboard, you know, away from your handbrake.
These reporters should be equipped with, like, little medallions or something so that they can say, here's your Darwin Award. Yes, yes, congratulations. You just won the Darwin Award. You're taking yourself out of the gene pool. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Darwin Award could have on the front, it could have a profile of Charles Darwin, and on the back, maybe a picture of Wile E. Coyote wearing his Acme rocket skates. Brother Deacon Asa says, wow, Mother Nature just pissed her pantsuit once she heard that stupid comment. Meanwhile, up in the far, not quite yet frozen north, Ron declares, oh, good, weather porn. Oh, I know. Ron and Raleigh says, I can't wait. Are you ready for the shots of the poor weather schmo standing in the storm, getting blown sideways, trying to duck flying sheet metal? Well, remember, I predicted it not too long back. One reporter did get killed. And all for the sake of being able to sell some soap or some pharmaceutical that includes a warning that your nose may mysteriously slide off, or a chemical compound, or as a chemical compound that sounds like a really advanced and talented scat jazz singer. Vidolizumab, vidolizumab, badoobabadi. Right. And what do you do if you're a young reporter? I mean, Jim Cantore is sort of accepted from all this because he's just nuts. If Jim Cantore shows up in your community, you're fucked. But young reporters make their bones doing this so that someday they can be Andrea Mitchell and never have to leave the studio again. Unless they're the hardcores and the real diehards. Oh, who was that guy during the first Bush War? They posted him to a roof in Jerusalem when the Scuds were flying. And they said, you know, back in the studio, Wolf Blitzer said, but you're not wearing your helmet. He said, well, Wolf, you know, it's a big world, and I think if a Scud's coming and it's got my name on it, I don't think the helmet's going to help much. Different breed. Ron in the far not quite frozen north says, Florence is providing us with a great opportunity for Darwinism. I'm also impressed with the interviews of those who have to stay home to protect it from them looters and meth heads who are just waiting to steal the VHS player and that big old CRT TV. One of them said, you know, it's just so darn hard to get back in here after the storm, and we got to protect our stuff. Well, if it's so hard to get back in after the storm, how are the meth heads and the looters getting in? I mean, it's kind of like coyotes in West Virginia. At some point in time, I guess they swam across the Ohio River. There's something about these events that somehow manages to bring out the most glaring examples of the stupidity of the species. But other stuff is going on. Lots of other stuff is going on. It was another one of those. If you go out looking on the internet, this is something for the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Are there any T-shirts out there that say vote for Pedro that have Pedro from Washington Journal's face on them yet? He could get rich. Pedro had a tough morning. Now, I figure our official Washington Journal correspondent, Todd, is kind of busy right now. Because it's going to get real rainy real quick where Todd is. So he may not have had a chance to catch Washington Journal this morning. Is Steve from Georgia staying in the chat room this evening? No? Steve may have missed it, too. By the way, Steve, Scott, if you're listening, Steve wanted you to know that he also appreciates your viewing recommendations. He finds those quite helpful. Wow, in the chat room, not Arthur Kent, was it? Aunt Marty says, I wonder if she's got a nice high-def copy of Point Break. People. Yeah, there's no hope for us. Subject line, not the flag. Lee says, the damage to the American flag got some people upset. Out of curiosity, would those people swim out in the storm if it was a Confederate battle flag?
Well, you know, it represents our heritage.
Right, yeah. Well, maybe just this once, Ron. Ron has a bumper for us. And it's not that I'm not a fan. That's actually one of the few songs that of theirs that do like. There it is. Clarity knew what I was getting at. ADHD, PTSD, a new therapy, new shooby-dooby-doo-bob. Ask your doctor and cowabunga dude surfs up. No, I just saw that vedolizumab. I don't even know what it does. I can't recall offhand. There's so goddamn many drug commercials on TV now. But I could just hear a great, you know, some jazz great Vidola Zoom app, that app deep. Yep. But like I was saying, it was another one of those interesting days for Pedro over at Washington Journal. The day began, as I noted, with Julius Geezer declaring that there aren't really 2,975 extra dead people in Puerto Rico as a result from Maria. He thinks they were just old and they just happened to die, and that the Democrats did it to it. This guy has such a case of paranoia. I mean, if this was happening to anybody who was not the president of the United States. That's like George Carlin said way, way, way back when talking about it. He said, Woody Hayes wears a baseball cap to a football game. If Walter Alston, then the manager of the L.A. Dodgers, if Walter Alston wore a football helmet to a baseball game, they'd take him away. Check his calendar. Because he'd be nuts. Well, the president of the United States is barking mad. Let me see if I can get the exact tweet real quickie like. He's been tweeting like crazy today, but there it is. 3,000 people did not die in the two hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico. When I left the island after the storm had hit, they had anywhere from 6 to 18 deaths. As time went by, it did not go up by much. Then a long time later, they started to report really large numbers, like 3,000. This was done by the Democrats in order to make me look as bad as possible when I was successfully raising billions of dollars, that's capital B and capital D for dollars, billions of dollars to help rebuild Puerto Rico.
If a person died for any reason, like old age, just add them onto the list. Bad politics. I love Puerto Rico. It's...
How do I explain this? I've got... In my own mind, in my own being, I have a conflict raging. Because my default nature is to feel sympathy and empathy for people who are suffering any form of illness. It's that whole "there but for the grace of God goes John Smith" thing. And so part of me is like, oh, that poor man, to be so sick. He is deeply mentally ill. But before he was ever deeply mentally ill, he was hateful, bigoted, ignorant, and just plain old pig-eyed mean. So that's the conflict with my basic inclination towards sympathy. And on top of it, he's the President of the United States. And I was actually getting ready to talk about Pedro. I think they should change the name of Washington Journal to Old Cranks on the Telephone. Because that's what the Republican and Independent lines mostly are. Oh, by the way, Steve says, Washington Journal. I'm here, brother. I missed WJ this morning. Had 3 medical-related appointments today. I just got in. If it's really mind-blowing, let me know. I can always get the podcast. Oh, you won't have to, Steve. I'm about to play it for you. Remember, we're going to rename Washington Journal Old Cranks on the Telephone. So the tweet went out, and immediately the maggots went into action. And so there was Dave from Lakeland, Florida. And he got through. Get the hockey puck.
The flea. Dave in Florida. Lakeland, Florida. Hi.
Good morning. I live in a state that's had our share of disasters, and we don't wait for the government to come in and start holding our hand. We take...
What's that? They don't wait for the government to come in and start holding their hand. They take action immediately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Of course, Dave's hand gets held at least once a month when the Social Security check comes through, and every time he goes to the doctor and uses that Medicare, the government's right there holding Dave's hand, but never mind.
Care of things herself. I live in a retirement community, and after Irma, I didn't see anybody from Washington stand around holding anybody's hand in here in our community, and we had damaged homes. As a comment I'd like to make about Puerto Rico, you got to want to help yourself. You can't sit around waiting for FEMA. You got to do something for yourself once in a while, and I think that's part of the problem down there. They're waiting for everybody else to do everything for them.
God bless America. We lift ourselves up by our own bootstraps here, and if they don't want to lift themselves up by their own bootstraps down in Puerto Rico, to hell with them. That's their problem down there, you know, because they ain't nice and white like I am, like we are here in my gated retirement community here in Lakeland, Florida. Where we had some damage from Irma, and there wasn't nobody from FEMA around here. What the hell's Puerto Rico think they need with FEMA? Whew. Yeah, I know, Marty.
Marty says, forget the hockey puck, pass the rock gut. Not the good stuff from Statesman. He's got him. Julius Geezer has him tuned to a fever pitch. And they've never needed to rely on no government for nothing. And it's them lazy layabout brown people down there in your Puerto Rico waiting for somebody to come in and hold their hand while they die of neglect. What do you mean you can't get to your dialysis appointments? Well, you just do your dialysis your damn self because you're American and you don't wait for FEMA to hold your hand. That's what you do. What do you mean you're done out of your heart drugs and you ain't had your heart drugs for a couple of... Quit waiting for somebody to hold your hand and just pray to Jesus to heal your heart. What's the matter with you people waiting around for the government to give you money? I'm not going to say it's a majority of this country. But a significant plurality of this country is just plain goddamn mean. Sitting there in his gated retirement community and just pissed off because people trying to make our great president, who's just trying to make America great again, trying to make our great president look bad because he done raised billions of dollars for Puerto Rico. Where is it, Donnie? Point us to him. Show us the billions, baby. Oh, wait, you're lying again, because that's what you are, a liar. But it is, but again, once again, the admonishment that if we think this is a problem that began with Donald Trump, then it is a problem we will never solve. I know it didn't start with Donald Trump because I've got the evidence. A couple of days ago, on the anniversary of September 11th, 2001, I talked about the people who don't get the bells rung for them here in Appalachia. People who don't have their names carved on granite walls. Well, there's an aspect of that here, too. This is pig-eyed and mean. But it's also, it's the nexus of pig-eyed and mean and dumber than dirt. Y'all have heard this story before, but it makes a little more sense in this context. For starters, we know that every year, about 1,000 people in the counties in West Virginia where mountaintop removal is taking place, die. Excess deaths. Once you factor in everything else, there are 1,000 more people dying in these counties than should be dying, and the only thing you can point to out of that is mountaintop removal and the particulate matter in the air and the blasting dust. But before that information ever came out, there was the study of over 1 million births that showed, for instance, that a woman who does not smoke but lives near mountaintop removal has 186% greater chance of giving birth to a baby with respiratory birth defects than a woman who smokes like a chimney and doesn't live near mountaintop removal. There is a clear, scientific, bright red line that runs from mountaintop removal to birth defects in the counties where mountaintop removal takes place. The study that was published about it was peer-reviewed. Other scientists looked at it and said, yep, it fits. But the response of the National Mining Association, which is now squarely in the maggot camp, well, they hired their PR law firm, their lobbying firm, to put out a statement that said,
Well, those birth defects aren't from mountaintop removal. Those birth defects happen because them hillbillies fucked their sisters. That's right, incest. Consanguinity, we call it. And misspelled it. C-O-N-S-A-N-Q-U-I-N-I-T-Y. Consanguinity. That study didn't take into account consanguinity. That would be your incest. That would be your incest is best. Put your sister to the test. Nearer kin, deeper in. Yeah, it didn't take account for none of that. And that was years, years before Donald Trump even showed up as a viable force on the political scene. That was back when all they were doing was hollering at the Obama EPA is conducting a war on coal. When the real war on coal was being conducted by their brothers and sisters over in the fracking industry, who had made coal too expensive to burn. So, like I said, if we make the mistake of thinking this is just a Trump problem, when Trump is gone, we'll think our problems are solved. They will not be. Root and branch. Root and branch. White wing, evangelical conservatism must be dug out and destroyed. Root and branch. Darlene in Connecticut with a note says, that's exactly how one of my client's employees lost her beloved cousin in Puerto Rico following Hurricane Maria. Her cousin could not get access to dialysis. Heartbreaking, and the staff member was understandably distraught. I guess her cousin didn't want to pull herself up by her own bootstraps enough to save her own life. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was a mite wrought earlier today. She tweeted, that's how my granddaddy died. Neglect. Couldn't get what he needed to survive after the hurricane because we had an administration that frankly just didn't care that much. Wonder how much money had been diverted from FEMA to ICE that year, last year. We know it's $10 million this year. But he raised billions of dollars. Yeah. The maggots, meanwhile, then tried to turn it against Mayor Yulin Cruz of San Juan, saying she was the real corrupt one. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, we had an opportunity, we could have, if we were competent, we could have mounted a Berlin airlift for Puerto Rico and saved a whole lot of those 3,000 lives. Our military is actually good at that kind of thing, and we did not do it. Look up the history of the Berlin airlift. It can be done if you want to. But in the case of the Berlin airlift, you know, we was fighting communism. Thorns for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Lots and lots of thorns. Well, thank you. Unlike Jesus says, Bob, you've missed your calling. There are plenty of movies that could have used your talents. Sling Blade for one, and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou for two. Well, if they ever decide to do a reboot, a hee-haw, I'm going to sign up. Or at least audition. That, of course, is a joke. By the way, of course, the New York primary is underway. I had a note from Lee earlier.
New York primary, even if the results are likely, voting is important. I want everyone to do it with me on November the 6th. Yeah, the I guess the New York State Democratic Convention was today out on Long Island or something. I've been getting a barrage of Cynthia Nixon emails. I don't know why, but I have been. Seems pretty obvious that she's going to lose, and then we'll find out a lot. And look, I'm not... There's a lot to complain about Andrew Cuomo about. But I give him this much. He signed the fracking ban into law in New York State. And there are a lot of people in New York State who have clean drinking water because of that. And that cannot be ignored. But after, you know, after all is said and done, we'll find out if, we'll find out about Cynthia Nixon, because it doesn't look like she's going to win. Don't send me hateful emails. That's just the way the smart money would bet. It's a New York election, and it's for New Yorkers. So, yeah. And by the way, I got Skype up and running. I had to reinstall. And I hate that. But I'm checking now to make sure the audio settings are right. Yep, all good. So that line is open too, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Toll free, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype gets you into the program. Let's take a little break. It is Thursday. That means that, of course, we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And, yeah, we're trying to raise $435, thereabouts. Any portion thereof, $435. And if we could get, you know, again, nobody's got $435. The only way this happens is a little bit at a time. $5 here, $10 there. And thanks to everybody who does keep the program on the air. By the way, Terrace pointing out, going back to Dana Lush, subject line, NRA. NRA is spelled with a silent KKK. Well, it's not so silent anymore. And we all know why. How does... anybody who said something as evil and stupid as Dana Lush and still has a job, well, that doesn't reflect so much on Dana Lush as it does on the people who sign her paychecks. At least that's how it looks from where I stand. Let's see. Sorry, I'm just getting things lined up here. This is what happens when one person produces the program and does the program at the same time. But like Ron said, I know you're not a fan, but it makes sense in this case, and it does. It's not so much that I don't hate this song. It's one of the other songs that I'm just, you know, the one that rhymes all the really stupid words. Flavio, you're welcome to say that. Cynthia Nixon, I just think she's kind of flaky and as distasteful as Andrew Cuomo can be at times. It's always better to have someone with a D at the end of their name. Well, you'll probably get hate mail for that, but it's hard to argue with you on that point. Anyway, if you want to engage in some conversation, if you're aware of any thorns that need bringing to the forefront, jump right in. In the meantime, yeah, we'll take a little break and hope that maybe we'll take a bite of the fundraising, out of the fundraising goal. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. Wonder what happens if we add in some hurricane noise.
Waiting for the thaw out. All the storm for the night. It's Thursday, September 13, 2018.
Even if you've ridden out storms before, this one is different.
Officials warn Hurricane Florence could knock out power for weeks.
Hopefully everyone in the Philippines is aware of what is heading their way.
10 million people are also in the path of Super Typhoon Manghut. Amid all of that, Trump administration moves to make it easier for oil and gas companies to release methane. Plus,
climate change is moving faster than we are.
United Nations chief warns of dangerous tipping point on climate change.
All of those tipping points and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We are totally prepared. We're as ready as anybody's ever been.
Does he even know what a hurricane is?
It's tremendously big and tremendously wet.
Nailed it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, 10 million Americans now in the path of Hurricane Florence, and another 10 million Filipinos in the path of the even larger Super Typhoon Manghut.
Yes, it's looking pretty dangerous out there.
Climate change is going very well.
As we go to air, Monster Hurricane Florence is still on track to hit the East Coast as a major storm and is forecast to stall, dumping potentially historic rainfall. No matter where Florence ultimately makes landfall, its broad geographic footprint will bring destructive winds, dangerous storm surge, and many days of relentless rain, triggering potentially historic coastal and inland flooding. Floodwaters will be a toxic soup of chemicals and waste. State officials are warning residents in its path that it could take days or weeks to restore many essential services like electricity, water, sewers, roads, and communications.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, only 2 of the 12 nuclear reactors that are in the path of the storm are the exact same model as those that failed in Fukushima.
That does not make me feel better.
Sorry.
Hurricane Florence is only 1 of 9 active or potential tropical cyclones simultaneously churning around the northern hemisphere, and it's not even the strongest one. In the western Pacific, Category 5 Super Typhoon Manghut is bearing down on the Philippines and Hong Kong. According to veteran meteorologist Guy Walton on a recent broadcast, this simultaneous storm activity in both the Atlantic and the Pacific is very rare and consistent with what we'd expect to see with global warming.
With the ocean heat content rising and atmospheric content rising, I do believe that you will get more potential energy for more storms. As you get more heat, you will get more storms, and that's exactly what we're seeing.
At the White House this week, President Donald Trump asserted that the federal government is ready to respond to Florence, and then he inexplicably boasted about last year's botched response to Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, in which ultimately nearly 3,000 U.S. citizens died.
I actually think it was one of the best jobs that's ever been done with respect to what this is all about. I think that Puerto Rico was an incredible unsung success.
Maybe there's a reason people are unsinging it, Mr. President.
Also this week, new documents show that earlier this summer, the administration diverted $10 million from FEMA operations to the ICE immigrant detention program.
Well, priorities.
Meanwhile, in a victory for the oil and gas industry, the administration this week proposed lifting Obama-era restrictions limiting the release of potent climate-warming methane gas from oil and natural gas drilling on the public's lands. Health experts warn the rollback will increase hazardous air pollution, and allowing drillers to waste far more natural gas through flaring and venting also means they'll get to pay less in royalties to the public.
And again, this announcement comes in the same week that Hurricane Florence is barreling towards the East Coast.
And on the same day, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, issued a dire warning.
Climate change is moving faster than we are. If we do not change course by 2020, we risk missing the point where we can avoid runaway climate change with disastrous consequences for people and all the natural systems that sustain us.
Guterres also challenged fossil fuel industry propaganda that tackling climate change could harm economic growth.
This is hogwash. In fact, the opposite is true. There is nothing to lose from acting. There is everything to gain.
Everything to gain, unless you're in the coal or oil industry or happen to be one of the many politicians who benefit from all of their campaign cash. For much more on today's stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'm gonna clean up the mess I made. Maybe it's not too late. Maybe it's not too late.
23 minutes past the hour, and thank you very kindly, Charlene, for getting us started this evening. Charlene says, my son and his family live not far from Moorhead City, North Carolina. I'm grateful to have the Horn family to sit with tonight. Well, we're happy to be sitting with you and sharing your concern. I hope and I trust that your son and his family have gotten the hell out of there. Keep us posted, please, Charlene, and thank you very kindly. So $400 to go fundraising for the evening. Thank you, Charlene, for getting us started. Hey, 40 folks at $10 and, you know, suddenly, it's not such a harrowing week anymore here as we approach the middle of the month. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very much. And seriously, do let us know how your son and his family make out. During the Green News Report, I took the opportunity to try to catch up a little bit on this business up in Massachusetts. At one point in time, there were something like 35 different fires all going at once. Authorities are reporting that they've gotten all the fires in Andover, Massachusetts, put out, and that Columbia Gas, which used to be, by the way, and maybe still is, headquartered right there in Charleston, West Virginia, that they were trying to get the system shut down. Now, I don't know what it means when the gas company has to say they're trying to get the system shut down. And what does it mean when there are 35, 36 fires all at the same time in the same natural gas network? So once upon a time we had a great big bomb in the yard for heat and cooking and water heating, propane. Gave me the creeps having that because we lived in the country and a lot of deer hunters and stuff, and I looked at the guy from the gas company one day, and I said, you know, will that thing withstand, say, a .30-06 bullet, and what happens if it doesn't? And he goes, you know, I don't know. We ain't never really found, we ain't had no reason to wonder, really. Because on the first on the Monday before Thanksgiving where we lived, hell, there were bullets flying like it was the civil freaking war. Because deer season. And I always felt a little iffy about it, because well, it's just so darn flammable. But we've never had natural gas, you know, in the house. It's always been electric. Now we heat with the little propane canisters in the winter. Oh, I dread that. But I don't know how gas networks work. If there's a fire in one place, does the fire run down the line and burn down the next house? And the house after that, and the house after that, and the house after that? I honestly don't know. If there's somebody who knows the gas business, I would love to be educated a little bit. The Massachusetts State Police tweeted, troopers on scene, more responding to Lawrence Andover, North Andover, to assist with scene security and traffic control after multiple suspected gas explosions and structured fires developing. As of about 15 minutes ago, Andover police reported all fires in Andover put out. They responded and put out 35 total fires in the town at the peak, 18 fires burning at the same time. At least three people injured in Andover, including one firefighter and two citizens. And what I meant by trying, these are gas-related fires. Columbia Gas is working to shut off gas service, and we'll reevaluate from there. At least four people being treated at Lawrence General Hospital for fire-related injuries. Boston Fire Department responding. Mutual aid in Lawrence. Six engines, three ladders, personnel and units being sent there. Off-ramps on I-495 from exit 42 to 45 were shut down. On-ramps will remain open to allow evacuation. At one point in time, about 50 minutes ago, they reported 60 to 100 homes currently on fire in the Merrimack Valley. That's just crazy. And because, okay, here, I got no business saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Probably shouldn't. And thanks, Isaac, by the way, for more details. Aren't these systems run on computers? And I realize that the people who think that Vlad is all cuddly and sweet and lovable, that they can't believe that there'd be anything like cyber warfare going on. But we've had reports of hacks into various and sundry utility systems. Any chance of... you just ask.
Yeah, I'm just asking. It's just a question. That's all it is.
Or is it because, say, all the money from corporate operations like Columbia Gas tend to go to the shareholders and the golden parachutes of the executive class and the executive compensation for the COO and the CFO and the CEO and the cuckoo ka-choo and not nearly enough goes into infrastructure? Is that it? I mean, for instance, we know that high-pressure lines that carry, say, frack gas are notorious for going boom. And we know that bomb trains go boom. But boom, 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 boom. How does that happen exactly? If you do have a functioning understanding of systems like that, by all means, let me know. Lee says, my stove is natural gas without oxygen. It's just gas. When I ignite the burner on my stove, it does not flow back toward the source. If there's a leak anywhere, that's a danger because of gas and oxygen together. This is just... We live in a world and in a time where the first two things you think about are A, a deliberate attack, and B, gross negligence. Deliberate attack from an outside force or gross corporate negligence driven by the relentless need for shareholder profits. Because I don't think there were 35 or 40 or 60 people running around turning on the gas and blowing up houses. At least that seems highly unlikely. So at the beginning of the program, Tracy mentioned that there was breaking news of a plea deal. By the way, when I played the clip from Dana Lush, Tracy said, what the entire fuck? Are you serious? Blame the victim? Had he shot the white off-duty female cop, he would have been dead either way. Bob, why are white people in charge? Because they wrote the rules. And have done everything in their power to remain in charge because, well, terror. scared to death of what happens when they're not anymore. But, yeah, apparently Paul Manafort has reached a plea agreement with Bob Mueller that will forestall his upcoming trial in D.C. because if he, maybe he realized, he and his lawyers, that if he couldn't win in a rigged courtroom where the judge was completely in the bag for him, that it was not going to go at all well in a courtroom where the judge was neutral. ABC News broke the story saying that the deal, the plea bargain, will be announced in court tomorrow, making the trial unnecessary. According to the report, Manafort and his most senior defense attorneys spent more than 4 hours Thursday in discussions with a team of special prosecutors who are involved in the ongoing investigation into whether there was collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. So he's going to have to get up, and he's going to have to admit something. Now, remember, the previous trial was all about all of his tax shenanigans related to work that really didn't touch on Donald Trump, and the judge, who was in the bag, made a point of saying, nobody gets to say Donald Trump in this courtroom. In the coming trial, however, the Russian collusion stuff was going to be front and center. And some aspect of that, whether it be obstruction of justice or lying to the FBI or whatever, he'll enter a plea to it. And he's already looking at spending effectively the rest of his natural-born life in prison as a result of the convictions over in Northern Virginia. By entering a plea, perhaps he hopes to keep his ass out of the stir on those charges. And perhaps the special prosecutor might agree to either stand silent or recommend a downward departure in the sentencing guidelines. The other aspect of this, of course, is that maybe he's doing it thinking he's going to get a pardon. Now, here's a fun thought, and I don't know the answer to it. Maybe Billable Rick does, or maybe Steve in New York does. Can you make an element of a plea agreement that the person entering the plea agrees not to accept any pardon extended by any chief executive of any governmental entity? I don't know. But then again, the other part of that is that if he were to accept a pardon, if Trump were to pardon him and he were to accept it, then the next thing that would happen would be that he would have no Fifth Amendment right to not testify truthfully to any questions that were put to him in any trial regarding, say, obstruction of justice or conspiracy with regard to Russia, or, hey, Michael Cohen, if Manafort knew about something like that. The D.C. charges include fraud, failing to register as a foreign agent with the federal government, both of which the convictions could be substantial and could put him away for the rest of his life. As far as Trump is concerned, his official contact begins in March of 2016, becoming campaign chairman in May, and then leaving the campaign in August, shortly after the Associated Press and the New York Times reported that Manafort was connected to foreign lobbying that he had not bothered to report regarding business in Ukraine. It's been a bad day for Julius Geezer since he got up. He hasn't had really many good ones for a very long time. And he's not going to have any good ones. I guess there's an outside chance that if the House impeached him and then he was acquitted by the Senate, there's an outside chance that maybe his approval rating would go up, but it's never going to go up much above, you know, 50. If he ever gets to 50% or 51, 50, it'll be a miracle. He's not going to get up in the stratospheric ranges that Bill Clinton got to after he was acquitted by the Senate. There just aren't, and again, it's that thing where your basic inclination towards sympathy runs headlong into what an unsympathetic, odious, terrible example of an attempt at a member of the human species Donald Trump is. He's done everything in his power for so long to make so many people miserable. He's lied and he's connived and he's shucked and he's jived. And he's attacked. Remember, he spent years engaged in a racist crusade against the President of the United States, claiming that he wasn't really an American. So, my basic inclination towards sympathy, again, is taking it on the chin. So I don't much care if he doesn't have any good days. But here's the thing, and it's a conversation we've had in the past, and I wanted to re-raise it because, of, you know, when I get done here, I'm either listening to Malloy or I catch a little bit of Lawrence on MSNBC. Damn, that man's smart. But I hear things. And they make me kind of go, what? And so he had some expert lawyers on last night, Lawrence did, who were talking about impeaching. And I actually tried to get Dr. Bill on the program this evening. I wanted him to opine on this because it's one of those matters where you need to know what words mean. Especially in a late 18th century context. Because it has to do with the impeachment language in the Constitution. Just a second. Agnes is still my producer, even though she's not in the room, so I just sent a message to Agnes asking her if she would try to get Dr. Bill on the line. Hopefully she will. Because what perked up my pink little ears was when these highfalutin lawyer experts that Lawrence O'Donnell was talking to began merging Trump's mental illness with grounds for impeachment. And that sort of clanked. It didn't ring true with me. And let me see if I can walk through this, not just for the benefit of the program, but for the benefit of my own mind. The 25th Amendment deals with issues of presidential incapacity. The 25th Amendment is not specific as to causation of that incapacity. And it's kind of a noodly mess as to how you trigger the 25th Amendment. But what seems abundantly clear to me is that physical and or mental incapacity is simply not covered by the impeachment clause in the Constitution. It's just not there. For comparative purposes, let's take a look at the impeachment clause and then look at the 25th Amendment. No, I don't want the Heritage Foundation's version. That's just going to be a bunch of propaganda. It's short. Article 2, Section 4. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. That's all there is. There's nothing in there about incapacity. There's nothing in there about if the president goes knuck and futz. There's nothing in there about if the president has the ague. Remember, we're talking about language from the 18th century. It's simply not there. Treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And as I work through this, we'll get an idea of why it's such a problem. Now let's go to the 25th Amendment, which is much more complicated. The single largest clause in the 25th Amendment is Section 4, which is what we are dealing with. And it reads, whenever the Vice President, a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide. And you know what you've got to do is you print it, you take out your pencil, and you start drawing little brackets. And you look for giveaway words like either the principal or so one, we know we've got to have the Vice President. None of this can happen without the Vice President's consent. And a majority of. So you've got to have 50.0001% of whatever number it is that it's either the principal officers of the executive departments we read that as meaning the cabinet, but there are other executive departments, for instance, that aren't cabinet level. Arguably, executive departments, one of them could be the National Security Council. The National Security Advisor of the United States is not a cabinet official because he is not subject to confirmation by the Senate. Or majority of such other body as Congress may by law provide. The Congress has not provided for such a body. So you got to have the vice president and a majority of one of those, and they have to then send a note to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, a written declaration that the president is nuck and futz. I'm being a little bit unserious there, but no, it would be a statement that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, period. The minute the vice president and those members sign that, then something happens. And the something that happens is that the vice president immediately assumes the powers and duties of, wait a minute, not the president, but acting president. The minute the note gets sent, the vice president becomes acting president. And then the mess begins. Because the president then sends a letter to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House that no such inability exists. Well, then he's immediately president again. This could theoretically happen within 2 minutes. Letter one gets to the Speaker of the House and the president pro tem, and boom. Mike Pence is acting president, and 1 minute later, a letter arrives, and boom, Donald Trump is president again. Unless the vice president and that same group who signed the letter in the first place, within 4 days, send a letter to the president pro tem and the Speaker of the House, a written declaration that no, really, he's unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Then it becomes Congress's job. See, this is why we have such a broken government. Everything, whether it be impeachment or 25th Amendment, devolves back upon the Congress, and we have a servile, craven, Republican, maggot Congress that is scared, water-boweled, of the power that Donald Trump wields over his weird, twisted, ignorant, hateful, mean, spiteful, pig-eyed, dumber-than-dirt, maggot plurality. Because while it's a plurality on a national basis, there are places in the United States where it is an undeniable supermajority. But Congress then decides the issue. So the letter has to go within the second letter from the vice president and the signatories has to go within 4 days of the letter from the president. And then Congress has to assemble within 48 hours if they're not in session. Then, if the Congress, within 21 days after receipt of the letter, of the latter written declaration, or if Congress is not in session within 21 days after Congress is required to assemble, you're back to that goddamn two-thirds supermajority in both houses that the president can't do his job. And if two-thirds agree to that, the vice president continues to discharge the same as acting president. never president. Under the 25th Amendment, the vice president never becomes the president of the United States. He is only acting president. And this is one of those little hobgoblins that has deviled the republic almost from jump. What is the vice president in the case? You know, because it's clear, like with Miss America, you've got a first runner-up because of Miss America in the event that she is unable to fulfill her duties. The first runner-up becomes Miss America. She doesn't become acting Miss America. The previous Miss America is unable to do her duties. She's gone, and first runner-up becomes Miss America. It is nothing approaching that clear under the 25th Amendment. And if the House agrees by a two-thirds majority that the president is unable to do his job, but the Senate falls a vote short, fuck it, the president remains president. Do you begin to see what a mess this is? So now we go back to the impeachment language. The only thing you can impeach the president of the United States or the vice president, all civil officers, yada, yada, yada. The only thing you can impeach them on are treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. So last night, it made my brain itch when I heard these highfalutin legal experts declaring that Donald Trump could be impeached for being crazy. I'm guessing in the minds of a majority of Americans, recent polling suggests there's an almost even split between to impeach or not to impeach, and don't impeach has a 1 percentage point lead. But I think we're moving toward a majority where people say, I mean, because even the maggots say, I wish he'd stop that tweeting. I think we're going to find a majority fairly soon who think that he's not okay in the head. And by the way, as an aside within all of this, just because of how my mind works, I want to make clear that if I say something like, he's knucking futs, I am not trying to be cruel to people who deal with mental illness. That is not my purpose. I've seen various forms of mental illness up close and personal. And it's no laughing matter. And the way that this country treats mental illness goes from no laughing matter to outright tragedy. I know that the word libtard gets trafficked a lot. You know, hey, I just set my Nikes on fire to own the libtards. And that's, you know, that's colloquial English, colloquial pop culture language. But I don't like that term because it participates of a slur against people with developmental delay, developmental disability. And to live in that world is difficult enough without people hauling out that kind of shit. There's a bit of a kerfuffle taking place now that centers on Norm MacDonald. Norm MacDonald said some things about Me Too and Roseanne Barr and Louis C.K. that got him in a world of shit. You know, he's the Norm Macdonald. Remember, he's the he's another one of those right wing has-beens from the days when Saturday Night Live really wasn't so funny. Well, Norm Macdonald, in the course of trying to defend himself against having slurred the Me Too movement, responded by saying, "You'd have to have Down syndrome to not feel sorry for the victims of sexual abuse." Let's hear that again. "You'd have to have Down syndrome to not feel sorry for the victims of sexual abuse." So in trying to dig himself out of one hole, he dug another pit and jumped into that. Because, you know, one thing that you can say, one thing that has been frequently observed about human beings with Down syndrome, they're deeply caring. And they are warm and loving. Sweet, even. Gentle, in many instances. And so Norm Macdonald said, in trying to get out of the hole he dug himself into with regard to Me Too and sexual abuse, tried to fix the previous slur by slurring a different group, people with Down syndrome. A guy I follow on Twitter by the name of David Perry, he's an academic. He said, "My son has Down syndrome. He is a complicated, fully developed human, but in fact, he's particularly empathic and intensely focused on emotions and sharing them." Some dickhead immediately responded to Mr. Perry saying, "All right, man, your child's fucking special, okay? Congratulations on killing comedy one word at a time because of your fucking feelings." We're a mean goddamn country. A friend of mine who is the kind of Christian that if everybody was the kind of Christian he is, Christianity wouldn't have the terrible name that it has. Observed that forgiveness is predicated upon repentance. Well, the weird, vicious maggot plurality isn't particularly interested in repenting for just how vicious they are. And, well, frankly, I don't know if Donald Trump has ever apologized for anything in his miserable, misbegotten, best part of him ran down his mama's leg life. That's what misbegotten means. So what I'm getting at is that I don't want anybody to make any mistakes about where I stand on this issue. I don't think you can craft articles of impeachment that say that the president is mentally ill and unable to discharge the duties of his office and impeach him for that. Because the meaning of that is so odious and so backwards that to go there would be to go to a terrifying place. If there's anybody out there that thinks that you can impeach a president for being mentally ill, what they are essentially saying is that mental illness can be a crime in itself. Because at some point in time, anybody who believes that you can impeach the president for being mentally ill is saying, well, I mean, mental illness is not treason. Mental illness is not bribery. Those two specific crimes are mentioned in Article 2, Section 4. That means you're left with high crimes and misdemeanors. Well, which is it? Is mental illness a high crime? Or is it a misdemeanor like jaywalking? Just a little crime. Either way, you wind up with criminalized mental illness. Granted, we've talked about this at length. Impeachment is not a criminal process, it is a political process. But the underlying allegations are of a criminal nature. Treason, bribery, high crimes, misdemeanors. High crimes is another word for felonies. That's why I wanted to talk to Dr. Bill to talk about that 18th century language, high crimes and misdemeanors. We've had conversations, for instance, and most people, I know I didn't, and most, I would guarantee the Horn family community congregation didn't know that when the word pursuit of happiness, when that phrase was used in the Declaration of Independence, that it doesn't mean what 99.9% of America thinks it means. That pursuit of happiness in the late 18th century is about the success of the community in which one exists. Now, if you're a constitutional originalist like Supreme Court hopeful Brett Kavanaugh is, well, you know what? I'd guess it probably hadn't been that long back in 1787 since people were being put in the stocks or in the dunking chair for being mentally ill. As far as up in, as you know from the conversation I had with our good friend Jeff Biggers, as far as up into the early mid-19th century, a woman was tried in Washington, D.C. for being a common scold. And that was a criminal charge. Maybe we could say being uppity. But it was a well-known crime both in the English and the American legal tradition. But I don't think that we as a nation want to go down the road of saying that it is illegal to be mentally ill. Because that way lies the pink triangles and the yellow stars of David sewn on clothing. That way lie the ovens and the camps and the warehouses. Every gay person in the United States of America, every bi person, every everybody within the LGBTQQQ+ community shares one common bond, and that is at one point in time, the medical community in this country thought that they were mentally ill because of how they wanted to love one another. To be transgender, to be transsexual, to be homosexual, to be lesbian, to be bisexual, was all at one point in time classified in the medical literature, relied upon by courts and doctors and lawyers all as a mental illness. Let's be clear. No one wants Donald Trump to not be president of the United States any more than I do. But this is not a machia. At least I hope to hell we are not willing to engage in Machiavellian ends-based justice or ends-based constitutional process. How many of us would trade the criminalization of mental illness for the removal of Donald Trump from office? I like to think I know this community pretty well, and I like to think that the answer to that question is zero. Does this make sense? Brother Deacon Asa, with a comment a couple of minutes ago, said, so you're saying that the rules governing Trump's so-called beauty pageants are harder and faster than the ones governing his presidency? I think the word I'm looking for is, well, we're fucked. I don't like the thought of Scott sitting out in San Diego scalding himself on a fresh cup of freeze-dried and saying, we're all screwed, Bob. But the essence of the idea of the stability of our republic has been the so-called peaceful transfer of power. And Jesus Christ, nobody got sicker of that phrase during the inauguration of Julius Geezer than I did. And it's the same song they play at every inauguration. And this is what makes America great, the peaceful transfer of power. Apparently, Geezer Disgustus himself is shambling around in the White House now. He had according to the Woodward book, he had a white, and I do mean white hot meltdown, the day that Mueller was appointed special prosecutor. And he, in turn, started hearing people say, they're probably going to impeach you there, bub. And he became livid. He's also been livid ever since it was pointed out that he let nearly 3,000 people die from neglect in Puerto Rico. He's not okay. I don't know how to put this in better terms. I'm not a physician, but there are just too many people in this community with experience looking at mental illness who have said, this looks exactly like what I've seen. Darlene in Connecticut with a question. What did they mean by a misdemeanor in the clause? Is it a high misdemeanor, or can a president be impeached for just a misdemeanor, say a domestic? Seems simple enough, right? So if Trump carries out his dream of shooting someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue, then that's impeachable as a high crime, right? Or did the founders have certain other high crimes and misdemeanors in mind? The Federalist Papers are helpful on this, but not dispositive. This is old 18th century language, and that's why understanding old 18th century English is so goddamned important. Or we can just say, screw the framers' intent. The language can change with it, can grow with the country. But in the 18th century, high crimes was another way of saying felonies. Misdemeanors was another way of saying things that are criminal but don't rise to the level of felonious conduct. But Darlene is right because of the way she goes about analyzing that phrase. And back then they used the weird English capitalization, almost as weird as Trump's Germanic noun capitalization. Because if you look at the Constitution, the way it's written, that phrase, high crimes, well, okay, no, let's go with treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Treason is capitalized. Bribery is capitalized. Or is not, other is not, and the word high is not. However, crimes and misdemeanors, which are both nouns, just like treason and bribery, they're capitalized. So you run into one of those legal snarls that makes first-year con law students get lost in the bottom of 1.75-liter bottles of old Panther piss trying to figure out, does high modify just crimes, or does it modify misdemeanors? Were there high misdemeanors in the 18th century lexicon? Say, for instance, in any modern criminal code, jaywalking is a misdemeanor. Stream littering is a misdemeanor. Littering is a misdemeanor. But so too is assault. So too is battery. So too is petit larceny. Some states have tried to address this by offering classifications of both felonies and misdemeanors. Well, it's a Class C. It's obviously a Class C misdemeanor here. We haven't quite gotten there yet in West Virginia. We got felonies, we got misdemeanors. But other states with more elaborate schemes have Class A felonies, Class B felonies, Class C, Class D, Class 1, Class 2, Class 3 misdemeanors. None of these things are as clear. If anybody out there is telling you that any of this is perfectly clear and obvious and there's really no question about it, please know that you're being bullshitted. Because it isn't. And as the Supreme Court under John Roberts has taught us, precedent is only precedent until it isn't anymore. Roe v. Wade is supposed to be settled law and the precedent that establishes a woman's right to choose whether to carry a pregnancy to term. But if Brett Kavanaugh gets on the court, it will literally probably not be much more than a matter of months, if not weeks, before that is tested. That's part of the urgency for getting him on the court, because the court goes into session for the end of 2018 on the first Monday in October. And the goal is to have him on the court then for every argument and every decision, including the Roe-based decision that will come his way. Or the Missouri-based decision that was recently given the green light by an appeals court for Missouri to start imposing outlandish requirements upon women's health clinics in order to keep them from being able to operate. The right-wing thinking being, well, okay, a woman's got a right to choose, and she can choose whether to carry that pregnancy to term, but she doesn't have a right to have an abortion clinic in Missouri that doesn't meet our outlandish standards for such a clinic. Brother Deacon Asa says, high crimes, such as when you put gas station pizza in your body when you have the munchies. That probably is a high crime. At least my gallbladder's pretty sure it is. By the way, going back to Norm MacDonald and the mental illness issue and the developmental delay issue, developmental disability, subject line Norm. Wow, I had no idea Norm was such a shithead. Bob, you sometimes fancy yourself a funny man. Is that fair to say? Well, sometimes I try. I sometimes fancy myself one as well. What the fuck, man? Was Norm trying to make a joke about with that Down syndrome dig? I know his humor's always been dry, but in this case, I'm not clear what that was other than mind-bogglingly stupid. Are we in the wrong line of work or what? I'm just gobsmacked. That's what constitutes a professional comedian trying to apologize? He's an SNL veteran, for Christ's sakes. Man, that one just broke my brain. What the fuck, man? What the actual holy living fuck almighty? I read it. I followed it and made sure my lying eyes weren't lying to me. But there it was. He said you'd have to have Down syndrome not to be able to comprehend that he wasn't trying to slur the Me Too movement, and he had such sympathy for people who had been subject to sexual abuse, blah, blah, blah. It's mind-bogglingly dumb. But it also betrays a certain amount of heartlessness. And a lot of comedy is grounded in pain and rooted in tragedy. The comedians are usually the saddest people on earth. Made more so because, by virtue of the fact that they make so many people laugh, nobody ever bothers to look at them and say, oh, by the way, are you dying inside? Because a lot of the time they are. Marty asking the question, does not perjury constitute a high crime? It does if the Congress says it does. Well, no, it does if the House says it does. The House is in charge of drafting the article or articles of impeachment. Remember, the House of Representatives has said that lying about a blowjob constituted a high crime, or at least a misdemeanor. Because, you know, they couldn't make treason or bribery stick. And every impeachment is largely done upon an ad hoc basis. Scott in San Diego says, I'm with you on this. Mental illness equals impeachability. And I also get the distinction of how Trump's degree of emotional psychological issues can cause him to engage in impeachable offenses. P.S. My current cup of freeze-dried coffee is all saucered and blowed, a.k.a. perfect temperature. Very good. I found that observation worrisome, the idea that Trump would be impeached for being mentally ill. Because it's just not there. Now, on the other hand, and see, this is where it. Everybody is, oh, impeach Trump now. I mean, I've been guilty of it, okay? I've used that hashtag, impeach Trump now, 25th Amendment now. It's handy. But it's a lot more complex than we dare to ponder. But we'd best ponder it before stuff goes badly sideways. I mean, imagine, if you will, an article of impeachment, articles of impeachment. And there's a count that says that he committed perjury. And there's a count that says he committed obstruction of justice. And let's say there's a count in there that says, by the way, he's crazier than a sprayed roach. Well, while impeachment is not necessarily a legal process, but rather a political one, it will have legal overtones simply because it's going to be tried on a constitutional basis. And so so the Senate in a trial would have to work out the particulars of how the trial would work. By the way, John Roberts would try the case. Yeah. You thought that asshole in Northern Virginia was a prick. Well, what happens, let's say he's tried in the Senate, let's say the articles of impeachment go through and he's tried in the Senate, but his defense team says, well, he may have done all those things, but hey, it's because he was mentally ill. Just like it says right there in Article 3. We plead guilty, mentally ill. You can't remove a president from office for being mentally ill. Well, then you're fucked, aren't you? And even though he's batshit crazy, he comes out of the impeachment and he's stronger than he went in. And so you say, okay, well, they've admitted he's crazy. We'll rely on the 25th Amendment. Bullshit. because the Vice President of the United States and a majority of the heads of the executive offices still has to sign that fucking letter to get the process started. And unless God starts screaming at Mike Pence to sign the letter, that letter's never going to be written. And it's such a short letter. Dear President Pro Tem of the Senate and Speaker of the House, we, the undersigned, do hereby declare that the President is unable to discharge the power and duties of his office, period. Love and kisses, Mike Pence, yours in Christ, Mike Pence, and list of names that are 50% plus .0001. Try to imagine Betsy DeVos's name on that. Or Ben Carson's. Or whoever that coal lobbyist is at EPA now. Just try. Won't take you long. Nope, not going to sign it, are they? And again, I come back to that idea that we are in a full-blown constitutional crisis. And we have been. And if this sounds like a broken record, I apologize. Stop telling us how to know we're in a constitutional crisis, Bob. Alexander says, yes, you're right, Brother Kincaid. The U.S. is totally and royally fucked. I mean, I actually spend probably too much time thinking about this stuff. Once you've had your cup of coffee in law school and they teach you how to do this stuff, even to the extent that it's a parlor game, it's an irresistible one. And even last night, the highfalutin, highflown legal eagles talking to Lawrence, and it was repeated this morning on that program, My Filthy Little Habit, that even if he was impeached, he's never going to be convicted in the Senate. I mean, look, noted never-Trumpers like Flake and different kind of Republican Ben Sasse, they're going to vote yes on Kavanaugh, even though Dianne Feinstein has some apparently really disturbing, creepy information about past conduct by Brett. Even though Sheldon Whitehouse has asked him point blank, sir, do you have a gambling problem? Yeah. And those are the people you're going to have to rely on to get to 67. And let me reiterate, you have to get to 67, whether it's impeachment or 25th Amendment. And in point of fact, under the 25th Amendment, you got to get to 67 twice. Or, well, you got to get to 2/3 twice. If that blue wave comes along and suddenly we've got ourselves a Democratic Speaker of the House and we've got Democrats in charge of all the committees, do the math. You do not have a 2/3 majority in the House of Representatives sufficient to get Donald Trump out of office under the 25th Amendment. Impeachment's actually easier. The House only has to vote by a simple majority to impeach. You got to have 2/3 in the Senate, but just a simple majority in the House, and
The conventional wisdom has been that, well, you know, if we just impeach him, then he'll resign. But that ship has sailed. Clinton wasn't going to resign because Clinton didn't feel like he'd been impeached legitimately over an impeachable offense. There's nothing out there, if we want to be a constitutional originalist, that says lying over getting a blowjob is a high crime or a misdemeanor. Because if that was the case, they would have drawn and quartered Thomas Jefferson, because he swore up and down that he did not have sex with that woman, Sally Hemings, even though I owned her, and I could have if I wanted to, all day, every day, and twice on Sunday, because I owned her, because she's a slave. She's the half-sister of my dear departed wife, but she's a slave, and I own her, and I can bang her like a Chinese gong if I want to. But I didn't. See? They didn't impeach over that kind of stuff back then. And there was a constant controversy over Jefferson and what he did with Sally. Not did with, did to Sally Hemings. Sally Hemings was the first Me Too. This is what a constitutional crisis looks like. This is what it feels like. The absolute failure of every constitutional means of trying to preserve and protect the Constitution of the United States and the Republic against someone who is openly hostile to it, and there's nothing. Nothing. Reminds me of something JFK said. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution what, unavoidable? Something like that? And that is not advocacy on my part, and I want this nation to be saved peacefully, legally, and constitutionally. But in Donald Trump, we have an individual who is so far outside anything that we would recognize as a norm, not McDonald. And because we have a craven, servile, lick-spittle Republican Party that absolutely has no idea what protect, preserve, and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic, even means, we are, as the saying goes, in a pickle. And by the way, here at the Horn, we're about to be in a pickle too. We got $400 to go in fundraising. It'll be $600 tomorrow night. And there are bills that await payment that make the difference in whether the lights are on here or not. 10 at 40, 40 at 10. Some combination along the way. And we'll get at least some of the bills paid. So, that being the case, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, Bob, I swear to God, I wasn't going to call.
Don't apologize.
Well, I sometimes wonder if I'm overdoing it with my calls, because there's so much that you talk about that resonates, and I think I've got something to bring to the party. But then again, I've been around me all my life, and I know how it can be when I go on and on and on. My favorite program director had an ongoing memo that he made copies of and just changed the date, in pen. Shut up and play a record, But anyway, I'm wondering if the breakdown here is with my hearing or with your speaking or what, because you said something that prompted the call, okay? You were talking about, let's say, Trump is impeached in the House, by the House, okay? And it goes to the Senate, and his defenders in the Senate say, no, no, no. He is, in fact, as you maintain, mentally ill and cannot be held accountable, therefore cannot be convicted after impeachment. Is this a matter of, in the regular courts, it's a matter of, what is that word, competency. So now we've got to, not like there's already enough to dance with, but now we have to deal with the matter of Trump being competent to be subject to the laws of the land, constitutional laws of the land. I'm gonna be bald before this is over. All of my hair will be torn out. So did I understand you correctly that that is a factor?
Well, yeah, I'm just gaming it out because, like I said, you know, this latest little head scratching exercise on my part was occasioned by a couple of high flown, you know, oh my God, went to good law schools, not some crummy little state school in West Virginia. Lawyer experts on Lawrence who were talking about impeaching Trump for being mentally ill.
I'm just
sitting there eating a little cup of Haagen-Dazs at the end of the day going, what the actual fuck? You can't do that. And I don't ever want to be perceived as defending Donald Trump. Far be that from any. No, God, no.
No, I'm not saying that. It's just that when you gave that combination of words and thoughts, I took a moment, and it struck me on a profound level. And by the way, I never once had a cup of coffee at a law school, major or minor, and I find myself thinking and mulling over these many things. As a matter of fact, one of my ex-wives used to tell me that I should have been a lawyer, because I'm like a bulldog with a rag toy. I'll latch onto something and I'll turn it every way but loose, you know, in my analysis and questioning about it. So I don't know. Maybe I did miss my calling.
Well, I can tell you this. It rewires your brain.
Well, I'm sure it does, because and most of the people who are on Trump's side, you know, and the people who are lawyers, whether elected, you know, in elected positions or just supportive positions, they already know the complexity here. You can't expect your typical Trump supporter out there in the hinterlands to grasp these weighty concepts.
Well, I can't expect your average maggot not to pick his teeth with his toenail clippings at the dinner table. I mean, what's your point?
Well, no, I mean, they're like one of the stand-up comedians had a routine about just what does your dog understand? And let's say the dog's name is Spock. And we all think we're on deep communication with our dogs. But really, from the dog's point of view, it's blah, 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 Spock. Blah, 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 Spock. Blah, 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 Spock. You know, they're catching maybe their name. And that's about it in terms of comprehension in dog.
Yeah, I've heard it said that dogs have the vocabulary of a 2 or 3 year old, which, you know, ain't much.
Yeah. But anyway, I you know, when you said that, I said, well, God, it's not like we have enough flaming hoops to jump through to rid ourselves of this meddlesome fool. You know, now the matter of competency.
Right, but we're talking about framers of a constitution who were not that far. They knew their English history far better than we know our American history. Okay, mm-hmm. And they knew what happened every time somebody got antsy with a monarch, and the only way to deal with a bad monarch is, for most of England's history, to chop their head off. And then everybody goes batshit. So they tried to come up with a system whereby you could remove a bad chief executive, but you had to have a really serious consensus about doing it. Because any country that goes into military juntas, chopping the head off the head of state, they're not going to have stability. And remember that the framers of the Constitution were deeply concerned with preserving their own wealth. That had been, you know, that was the heart and soul of the Revolution. We don't want to pay a bunch of taxes for a king that sends troops over here to keep us from getting slaughtered in our sleep. We want that shit for free. We're busy getting rich here. And so they were hell-bent on coming up with a government that would be so stable that their wealth would never be at risk from anything but their own stupid proclivities toward gambling. And for that, they were willing to be on the hook, if they absolutely had to be. So they made it hard to remove the president. They made it difficult. And also, you're dealing with however many houses, many members of the House of Representatives. But when you say two-thirds of the Senate in 1787, that was 26 senators.
Yeah.
So two-thirds and that was also before the dawning of political parties, or as they called them, factions.
And so what they did, the bottom line here, is they gave us a tool which is impossible, which is difficult, if not impossible, to use.
Yeah, and really, if you want to talk, I mean, there's some built-in forgiveness for what the framers did with the impeachment clause. They dropped the ball trying to figure out what the actual job of the vice president was. I think they found themselves in such a mess with the vice president that they just decided to punt it like they did slavery, so that, you know, some other generation would have to fight and bleed and die over it. But where it becomes unforgivable is after the JFK assassination, when they finally get around to doing the 25th Amendment, they made it impossible too. Or maybe, and you know, we're talking about the 1960s, okay?
Yeah, I remember.
The practice of law and modern reality was on top of them, and they still hung that two-thirds majority there, and you got to have two-thirds of both houses. And they knew how Republicans behaved back then, too. Republicans are not that different between 1964 and 2018.
Well, hell, some of the roots of the issues and maladies we find ourselves surrounded by today are found in 1964. I give you Barry Goldwater, for crying out loud.
Bingo. That's exactly what I'm getting at. So they still made it a convoluted, and it's probably because they had, you know, the JFK issue was fresh in their mind. You know, when you see the back of the president's brain go out the front of the president's head, it makes everything kind of obvious.
Yeah.
But they'd also had in the immediate past Eisenhower's heart attacks to deal with.
Yeah. And a minor stroke, as I recall.
And so that part of it got taken care of in the first couple of clauses of the 25th Amendment, but then they started worrying about, you know, what they started worrying about. The Wilson problem.
Yeah.
Because, as I said before, in conversation a couple of weeks ago, that the Wilson issue, some historians say that the roots of World War II lie in what Thomas Riley Marshall didn't do in the disability of Woodrow Wilson. Which is, I mean, it's a heady thing to contemplate, and, you know, once again, don't have enough time. But, you know, there was a man who was utterly incapable of carrying out any of the duties of being president. And his wife and physician spent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, making sure that Congress could not determine that for themselves. And so... So the answer that they came up with in the 25th Amendment was that mess in Section 4, and it's a hot mess. It doesn't even define who the people who sign on with the vice president are. That's some seriously screwed up language. Principal officers of the executive departments. Well, Jesus, that could be the assistant deputy secretary for toilet maintenance in the USDA, for Christ's sakes.
In a way, we see it in action with the way that the New York Times protected the cowardly writer of the New York Times anonymous op-ed, a senior administration official. As a number of pundits and wags have pointed out, that narrows it down to about somewhere between 100 and 200 people, which really isn't much in the way of narrowing it down.
Well, you know, let's face facts here. So much of our history is littered with, and so much of our present circumstances is sourced in a combination of two things: a lack of imagination and a lack of workability. And I point to Trump himself sitting as president, or twooping as president, and he is there, and I would say that it could be safely stated that a lack of imagination on the part of many voters and non-voters, and a lack of workability once the results of their lack of imagination have been installed, ensconced in high office. You know, and you put them all together, and what do you have? You've got trouble right here in River City. And that rhymes with P, and that rhymes with P, and that starts with P, and I'm not talking about pool, you know?
Yeah, well, see, I kind of saved the best for last here.
Oh, God, I'm sitting down.
Because there's that language early in Section 4 that says, or such other body as Congress may by law provide. Now, how can Congress provide by law for a body to exist if the president does not sign the law into effect? One.
Yeah, there is that.
But two, what if Congress declared that Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor, who, if we are to believe Bob Woodward, has had it made clear to him by none less than John Dowd that the president is not playing with a full deck, that, for instance, the man can't not lie. What if he were to be empowered to make that determination and report back to Congress? Well, you've still got to have the problem is you've still got to have the vice president's signature. The vice president is the sine qua non of all of this, and so all of no matter how you turn this jagged little Rubik's cube, you keep coming back to a 2/3 requirement in either one or both houses of Congress. And by the way, Bill in Allentown said, it grinds my gears how people say the Senate and the Congress, and it goes right over their heads that the Senate is part of the Congress. People think of the word Congress, and they think of the House of Representatives. But yeah. No, the Congress is both the Senate and the House, and that's well taken. And, of course, Bill closes by saying, we're all fucked, Bob. My little ray of sunshine disease is apparently very catching.
Well, and you talk about Pence. Now, there's a slender thread on which to hang the fate and future of everything. You know, knowing this guy just from his religious fixation, you know, he would not utter the word shit if he had a mouth full of it. So don't expect him to pick up any pens anytime soon to sign things.
Which leads us to one and only one alternative. And that is...
Get drunk.
Well, no, although, you know, far be it from me to criticize that. And it has particular relevance with the in light of the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, who thinks that every president, at least the Republican ones,
that he works for and gets paid by should be above the law. The only thing that's outside both the political process of impeachment and the political slash medical process of the 25th Amendment is the ability of the president to be outright indicted for violations of the criminal law. And if you pay attention to that discussion, first, the maggots always fall back on, yeah, but the Justice Department has this here policy. Well, the Justice Department's policy is not the same thing as it's in the Constitution. That can go bye-bye every bit as fast as Roe will the minute Brett Kavanaugh gets on the court, but it won't go bye-bye if Brett Kavanaugh gets on the court. This has to do with, this isn't just another example of what all is on the line if Brett Kavanaugh gets on the court. Because, again, I'll note that the president is implicated in no less than two and probably four felonies out of the Cohen matter all by itself. But already the powdered and pampered panjandrums of the for-profit media are saying, well, you know, if it turns out that he can be indicted, the indictment would have to be held in abeyance until he's out of office. Really? Well, that's the same as being above the law because, as we all know, justice delayed is justice denied.
Yeah.
So the argument is that if the president murders somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue, deliberately, willfully, maliciously, wantonly, everything that you need for first-degree murder, that we have to wait till he's done being president before we can try him for fucking murder? Because once again, hello, constitutional crisis.
It may well be, and this is strange, but it may well be that if the mechanisms such as they are that we have in place to deal with or dance with these things that we're up against, you know, if all of them fail us or fall short in some powerful way, it could well be that the only solution or the only way to a solution for this could lie in Trump himself to do one of two things. Either step down, which we know he's not going to do, because here's someone who does not apologize, and stepping down would be a form of trying to make things right. He doesn't see that anything's wrong, so don't expect that to be happening. But the other thing that would need to happen in lieu of stepping down would be for him to have an easily discernible breakdown of some sort, medically based, that would be abundantly clear to people across the spectrum, that there could be no argument against that. And I'm kind of betting that, you know, that set of circumstances may cut in line and provide us with a solution. It's not the most favorable one, because you don't like to see anyone or anything suffer. And I, you know, like I said, you were talking about his seemingly unending strings of bad days. And I invited you through an email to think of the person you know who is the strongest in mind, emotions, psychology, etc. Now think of them being battered and buffeted about by the worst kinds of circumstances you can imagine. As strong as that person is, there's always that chance that under such an unrelenting onslaught, they might well crack or at least weaken in their sturdiness or steadiness. Now think of Trump. He's definitely not strong in terms of his mind, his emotions, his psychology, etc. We already see signs of him reacting to the continuing stresses and strains. And your magic eight ball will not help. You won't need it, in fact, to see that a crack up is in his and our future. And that's what I'm kind of betting on, Bob.
So am I to understand that you're putting faith in this alleged adult in the room in the anonymous op-ed? Because you talk about slender reeds, that's really slender. I mean, that's a coup.
Even before the anonymous op-ed, anybody who is rational and even partisan to a degree, and even Republicans noted this during the run-up, you know, during primary season in 2016, even they acknowledged that he was just as loopy and not only unprepared but unqualified, just in the sense of his personality and manner, to be the chief executive of the United States. Look at the tapes. Look at the writing in the newspapers, in the magazines.
Well, I just had a note from Darlene. Darlene says, Scott's complicating things. It's not lack of imagination or whatever for the fix we're in. It's about grabbing and maintaining power. I've been saying right along that Rob Mueller is going to find or report that Trump is mentally unfit to stand trial. He got Dowd's message loud and clear, or long ago he figured it out. I think it's the latter. And if that's the case, you know, I mean, maybe there'd be some solace in that, unless I'm misunderstanding Darlene somehow, but it does not provide a remedy.
Well, I was mainly, when I was talking about a lack of imagination and a lack of workability, that was mainly directed at the people who wrote the documents long ago, and then more recently in the case of the 25th Amendment.
Well, I don't think they lacked either creativity or, no, I think they failed to take into account just how awful human beings would be from a political standpoint in the future. I mean, that's,
well, to me, that speaks to imagination. That's what I meant by.
Well, I see it as a sort of innocence.
They made
judgment calls about things they needed to. None of the Bill of Rights is in the Constitution, because right. James Madison didn't think you needed one, because shitting on people's right to worship as they pleased, or a federal government that would do that, or say that people couldn't say as they pleased, was just beyond his comprehension. But along came people who said, oh, no, we know people who would like to do that. We're not signing off on this unless we get a promise of a Bill of Rights. And, of course, it derived from Virginia, where you had power-mad, wealthy slave owners who would do it in a minute.
Yeah.
Who went after each other on the floors of their own governing bodies. But, you know, I work in these broad examples because it's the only way to make it clear how ridiculous what is being said by our so-called betters. Let's assume, because it'll be January before we know it, and it'll be State of the Union time again.
Oh, God.
Let's assume that Donald Trump steps out onto the podium in a Zippy the Pinhead clown suit with an open fly, and he takes out little Donnie and begins flapping it to the extent that he can get at it through the rolls and everything, begins waving it at Congress assembled.
Bob, people are eating.
Ah, come on, it's 8:56. It's almost 6 o'clock, okay? I mean, you got a fighting chance on the Pacific Coast. But let's say he does that. Well, immediately CNN will go to some diehard maggot who will say, "See, he's given us an example of what Hillary would have been like if she'd have been the president, and this is how we're going to have to make America great again. We need to all wear Zippy the Pinhead clown suits and wave our members at America, MAGA y'all." I'm deadly in earnest here. Tell me, Scott, I dare you to tell me that the Republican maggot Congress wouldn't do something approaching exactly that.
No, you won't find that response coming out of my mouth or any other orifice. because I can't argue with you on that. But I kind of think, looking ahead, because the future may be our only hope. Looking ahead, after all of this madness is behind us, it's already, we're acting as if it's beyond us, and it's not. We have the capability to get important stuff done in this country. We're just not acting upon it in a meaningful, responsible way. But once this is behind us, and it will be at some point, I'm looking at a fix to avoid having to dance with this type of shit ever again in our future.
Well, you think...
Wait a minute, hear me out. I tend to think that some aspects of the solution will be found in the problem itself, not unlike a math problem. And if wise people and capable people are in places where they can design, define, create, and then implement in a powerful, relevant, usable way from here on after all this, that, you know, we will take our cue from the problem itself so that we'll have a fix to our current fix.
So what you're suggesting is that the government of the United States is going to behave against type and against what it's done for its entire existence and not just kick the can down the road. Because, see, Scott, I could say that, for instance, after after the reign of error was over, after we saw what the Electoral College had done again, that we would come up with a fix for that.
Well, I could, that's
but
a good
we didn't.
Question that you, that's a good question that you pose that I can only.
And you can
to.
Certainly say the same thing about slavery and 67 years that went by, and nobody did anything about that except for, say, the House of Representatives forbidding anyone to even raise the issue of abolition.
Well, you do raise a good quandary in terms of our ever behaving against type and against previous examples in history, but I can only point to, and maybe it's a weak comeback, I can only point to the civil rights legislation in 64 and 65, which was definitely against our previous action or inaction. It was against type. And I think it, you know, part of why that legislation came into being in 64 and 65, part of the reason was there were things going on up with which we, of the people who gave us that legislation, decided our country would be better off not putting up with, you know, to finally take a stand. And maybe you're right. Maybe things have devolved to the point in capability or reason that no solution is possible, no remedy is forthcoming, and as I often sometimes say, or sometimes often say, we're all screwed, Bob. Maybe that's it. Maybe we are. Maybe there's no sense in even going to vote.
No, quit that. No, of course there's a reason to go vote, because there's ever so much more than impeachment that's on the table, or the 25th Amendment, or the criminal prosecution of Donald Trump.
Yeah, but ultimately, what will it matter, Bob, if there's no hope, there's no change in the future, immediate or far-reaching, what's the fucking point?
Because the point
of... I'm arguing against myself here, but what's the fucking point? If nothing's changing in any meaningful, effective way, fuck it, let's drink and have a party and see how it plays out.
Well, something like 52 or 53% of eligible voters in 2016 took that approach, and look what we got.
Exactly. So So, I, you know,
but in a larger universe of consideration.
Hey, Kitty.
I went down this road simply because there are a lot more people that watch Lawrence than listen to this program.
Yeah.
But I felt like I owed a duty to our community to point out again where we are. And it is not where we are being told we are. If where we're being told we are is that we can impeach the president for being mentally ill.
Yeah. And that is a valuable thing to know.
And then, moreover, to understand what you would have to do to get the president out of office based upon his mental illness.
Well, you know, the whole situation reminds me of that business of lab rats, where they have the maze and there's like four or five tunnels. And at the end of one of the tunnels is a little hunk of cheese that rats especially like. And the rat will check all the tunnels and will go down finally when it discovers the one with the cheese in it. When you repeat the exercise, more often than not, the rat will not continue to go down the non-cheese tunnels. The first one the rat will check is the one where he found the cheese before. And unfortunately, we're in a situation here where a lot of us have a lack of imagination when it comes, and workability when it comes to the matter of tunnels and cheese. We're going down the same four tunnels that don't have the cheese. You know, why don't we learn something from lab rats and start going down tunnels that are productive and rewarding? You know, and well, that's the answer to a number of questions. Why did 52% of the people behave stupidly in terms of voting this last time around in 2016?
Well, that's another three hours, like, and we can't do that.
Well, but some of the reason has to do with going down tunnels that are empty, you know? And anyway, that's, like you said, that's another long conversation. But I'm glad that the program delves into these things, because this is real. This is not any kind of dress rehearsal. What we do or don't do will have consequences. And if you don't see that today in terms of our doing or not doing 2 years ago almost, then, you know, you really got to open your eyes. Put down whatever it is you're drinking or inhaling. And start looking with clearer eyes and mind.
Yep. Well, Scott, you have yourself a good evening. Thanks for the call.
I will, Bob. You take care, and goodbye and good night to all the fun lovers and truth seekers out there in radio land.
Later, Scott.
This is your announcer, insert name, signing off.
See ya, insert. Our buddy Scott in San Diego. I understand what he's getting at, but I also, you know, like I said, I feel like we need to be clear-eyed about what's going on here, because over here on our side, there's a lot of people saying, oh, impeach Trump, impeach Trump. And they think that by impeaching him, he'll step down. Mm-mm. Yeah, No. Darlene in Connecticut will get the last word. I also think Trump suffers from serious short- and long-term memory losses. He completely forgot that document or treaty the staffer pulled off his desk. He forgot to sign that executive order in front of the camera. Who's to say he hasn't forgotten what happened with Puerto Rico? He's clearly a pathological liar, but who's to say that it isn't also easy to lie when you can't remember the truth? And regardless of what the cause is, one of the fundamental problems is that we have no one who is empowered to make that determination. I mean, I'd love to see the 25th Amendment revisited. If we get to some, again, the phrase clear-eyed, place where we've got enough government to do it. But as long as there is anything short of overwhelming majorities in both houses of Congress, the House and the Senate, That ain't going to happen. Now, I understand what Scott was saying about, fuck it, let's all have a drink. But you can make it happen. I mean, I saw numbers early today about, you know, likelihoods of the House being taken over, that kind of thing. And who was going to vote for Democrats and who was going to vote for Republicans. And it was a pretty impressive number. But you know what? The minute I saw those numbers, what popped into my mind was that it was far and away insufficient in a whole shit ton of districts to overcome Republican gerrymandering. You know who's not worrying? Steve King's not worrying in Iowa. Louis Asparagus Gohmert's not worrying in the 1st District of Texas. If she had chosen just to run for her office instead of run for Senate, Marsha Gedneth Blackburn would not be worrying in Tennessee. There probably aren't that many maggots in maggot states that are worried about reelection. Ted Cruz would not be nearly as worried about being reelected to the Senate if he hadn't been so unmaggoty going into the convention and thereafter. Well, as the old saying goes, watch this space. Friday on the front porch tomorrow, assuming that we're on the air. We finished tonight with 400 to go. Tomorrow it'll be 6. And we'll see if Conversation Radio continues. Thank you to all of you who support the program. Thank you for letting us sit with you this evening, Charlene. And thank you for helping out again. So very much thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our subscribers. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.